Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome to the Tuesday edition of the Three Martini Lunch. And Jim, we said it for weeks, we said it for months, we've even said it for a couple of years now, what the Democrats, and particularly President Obama, wanted to put into the health care bill is probably unconstitutional. Forcing people to buy stuff, probably not what the founders intended. And on Monday, federal judge Henry Hudson in Richmond, Virginia, agreed with the state of Virginia's case that that portion of the new health care law, the individual mandate, is unconstitutional. Here's the man who spearheaded the lawsuit, Virginia Attorney General Ken Cuccinelli.
My first job as Attorney General is to uphold the Constitution, and they don't seem to be as interested in that as I am. But we're absolutely committed to that. If you really think about what's at stake in this case, it's not about health insurance, it's not about health care, it's about liberty, and it's about protecting against the overreach of the federal government.
That's Ken Cuccinelli on the Fox News Channel responding to an op-ed in the Washington Post today from Eric Holder and Kathleen Sebelius, suggesting that the unconstitutional argument doesn't hold water and that eventually people are going to need health care. This is obviously a long road, legally speaking, Jim, but as Cuccinelli said, it's better to have a win here than a loss.
Actually, Greg, I think you're mispronouncing it a little bit. A lot of people think it's actually Attorney General Cuccinelli. It's actually pronounced Future Governor Cuccinelli here in the Commonwealth of Virginia. Obviously, look, being the point man on a successful challenge of Obamacare will do a heck of a lot of good for a guy if he ever wants to be elected to a higher statewide office at some point in the future. And worth noting, here in Virginia, we have this crazy law in which governors are only permitted to serve one term. So by 2013, we'll be looking for a new governor, and Cuccinelli is certainly helping his case with this one. I'm of two minds on this, because if you ask me why should Obamacare be repealed and why should Obamacare not be enacted, to me a very big reason would be the people don't want it. And that's a fairly glaring point there, that this is not, government is supposed to reflect the will of the people in many cases. And when, the fact that it polled terribly pretty consistently and not one Democrat or very few Democrats dared bring it up or tout it on the campaign trail tells us a great deal, that this is a phenomenally unpopular piece of legislation. The will of the people ought to be respected. However, a legal challenge, if that's the avenue that ends up stopping Obamacare, you won't see me, sitting on my hands if that's the case. I think this is fairly useful, and I think it's because it's a fairly easy concept for people to get their heads around. If the government can require you to buy something, it basically can make you do anything. And it's kind of fascinating to see Holder trotting out the utterly exhausted car insurance comparison, because if I don't want to buy car insurance, I have a very simple option. Don't drive. Take taxis, take public transportation, get a friend to drive me. There's all kinds of options for getting around without driving. For health insurance, you have to buy health insurance, or I guess you're not allowed to be a resident of the United States of America, or I guess they had to have you paying this fine. It's a fine, but it's not a tax, et cetera, et cetera. It's one of those things where the contradictions in the Obama administration's thinking of how they got this passed are becoming increasingly clear. Now, obviously, it's a long road ahead. This is all going to end at the Supreme Court. But any day the headline is "Judge Rules Obamacare Unconstitutional," it's a good day for conservatives.
Yeah, that is a good day. And you're right. In political terms, it's a fine. In legal terms, it's a tax, because that's the only way they can try and claim that this is constitutional. And as a friend of mine likes to say, this will go through the system and then eventually we'll find out what Justice Kennedy thinks about it. So because otherwise it's pretty much guaranteed to be 4-4, and he's usually the swing vote on that.
I hope he gets up on the right side of the bed that day. Please don't let anybody cut him off in traffic or him spill coffee as he's walking into the building. It'll put him in a bad mood, and then the whole course of American history will be altered because of want of a good coffee lid.
Exactly right. Well, let's move on to the bad martini now. And Utah Senator Bob Bennett did not win his own party's nomination. He won't be returning to Washington. And we're starting to find out another reason why. Bennett told some Utah reporters, and this was reported on the Hill's website, that while the Republicans don't like the Democratic version of the DREAM Act, and that's the bill that would give legal status and scholarship aid to illegal immigrants in this country who are young people, that the Republicans are going to try and come up with their own version of this because it needs to happen, and that many of the senators he's spoken with on the Republican side of the aisle agree with him. Now, apparently he has a lot of one-on-one lunches with Lindsey Graham, but it's curious that if this is true, that a lot of Republicans really think this is a good idea, maybe they haven't learned as much as we thought they learned.
Well, Greg, when I first saw that story that you said you wanted to talk about, I was kind of left scratching my head and thinking, Bob Bennett is talking about what's going to happen in the next Congress. How would he know? since he's not going to be here. This is kind of like, you know, you and I saying what's going to be in the next Congress, because, you know, we'll have the exact same voting power as he will. Now, apparently this this might be what he's hearing in private conversations. I don't know about you, Greg. I find it very plausible that this is something that that other Republican lawmakers might be saying to a lawmaker who's about to depart the chamber. Sure, Bob. Yeah, we're going to take up our own vote. Don't worry. Don't you worry. This thing you really wanted, we're going to work on that. You rest assured and have a nice retirement. Let me help you pack your office there. So it's possible. I've tough time believing that with all the other things on the Republican agenda, i.e. probably some very tough spending cuts, that they're going to take up this item that they know enrages their base, that has been, you know, pretty solidly rejected, and that at the very least is pretty politically untenable, at the very least until border security has been really well enacted and the American people feel much safer about their southern border.
Absolutely. And on to the third martini now. And Michael Steele playing a little bit of Hamlet, saying he, or at least leaking the idea that he wouldn't run for another term as RNC chairman. Now it turns out that he will. Most believe that he has no credible chance of actually winning re-election. And Jim, it strikes me that he's a little bit like the 2006 Republicans. Complete financial mismanagement, a lot of ethical problems. The only difference is he's actually won recently, but there's a good debate as to whether that's despite him or because of him.
Yeah, I think probably his slogan will be, you know, give me another 2 years, I'll get you another 63 House seats, which if that were to come to pass, would be spectacular. I'm rather skeptical of this. This morning you saw Howard Kurtz kind of grumping, if that's a verb, that too many reporters had concluded in their heads that Michael Steele was not going to run for another term. Well, they came to this conclusion for a couple of reasons. One, the committee is $15 million in debt, and that's a rather challenging record to tout for another 2 years. Michael Steele did not show up for an RNC chair debate that was sponsored by FreedomWorks, and that would seem to be, to me, a fairly big sign that you're not that interested in going for another 2 years. And then the third one was that RNC committee members were saying this. And, you know, this obviously everyone was saying this was speculation and Steele's playing it very close to the vest. But generally, if you want to be, you know, a second term, you're probably out there from the very beginning saying, give me a second term, give me a second term. Now, whether you said whether Steele has no chance at being reelected, I'm skeptical of this, but I wouldn't completely count this out. And one of the reasons is, Steele has his base of support. He did very well in the early rounds, and a good portion of it is RNC committee members from U.S. territories like Guam and Puerto Rico and all that stuff, because each state and each territory gets three votes. And so obviously the support of the three Republican committee members from Puerto Rico is every bit as valuable as the three Republican committee members from Texas or the three Republican committee members from California. So he's going to have his base of support. He's going to have his Steele loyalists in this. And one of the things that I'm finding, you know, frustrating as I cover this is that the audience of NRO and a lot of conservative grassroots want to see this as a popular election campaign, i.e. who's saying the best stuff, who's got the best vision for the party, and let's put that guy in charge. This is very much about who appeals to these 168 RNC members, and this very much is done on one-on-one meetings. I don't want to say it's shady backroom deals, but in a lot of cases, a lot of these, you know, committee members are going to say, what can he do for the state party in my state? What can he do more or less for me? And I don't want to say it's going to be settled on provincial concerns, but I'm just going to observe that it's going to be very much based on these longstanding ties and business relationships and personal relationships. This is not a participatory contest for a lot of Republicans, even though it could have very big impact on a lot of Republican races come 2012. So it's a bizarre kind of set of circumstances. There's a weird dynamic to this. There's a public campaign and a private campaign, but we really shouldn't fool ourselves. It comes down to the private campaign amongst those 168 members, and we will see how they decide in early January.
Well, as they say, as goes Guam, so goes the Republican National Committee. So we'll find out, I guess, in a few weeks here. Jim, enjoy the last few drops of your martini there, and we'll talk again on Wednesday.
Looking forward to it, Greg.
Jim Garrity of NationalReview.com. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Please join us on Wednesday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.